the Fertility Podcast, is here to help you understand more about your fertility. And for the last 8 years, has published a lot of conversations with experts and people sharing their stories. It's now going back to its roots, giving you people's lived experiences once again to give you comfort in knowing there's a community of people who get it. So you find commonality, be inspired, and know you're not alone. Started by me, Natalie Silverman, a former patient, once I was pregnant after fertility treatment, I later joined forces with Kate Davis, an independent fertility nurse consultant, who is now your host. And here she is.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to another episode of the Fertility Podcast. And before we launch into this week's guests, I want to give you a little bit of an update on Gemma. So you may remember that mid-February of this year, we featured Gemma, and Gemma is currently going through IVF treatment and donor conception. And this episode that when I spoke to Gemma in February, is called Gemma IVF and Donor Conception Diaries, because we're going to be following Gemma on her fertility journey. And I'm delighted that we have a little update for you today. So we're going to get into that in a second. But if you haven't listened to Gemma's episode, stop right now. Go back onto your podcast, wherever you find your podcast, whether it's Spotify or Apple. Find that episode, listen to that first, and then come back right here and continue on this episode so you can get the update, and then you can listen to our guests for today. Does that sound okay? So here's Gemma's update.
Oh, hi, Kate. It's Gemma. I just thought I'd give you a little update of where I am in my cycle since we last spoke when we did our podcast. So good news, I started my mock cycle on the 12th of January. So my clinic always do a mock cycle before the real thing, because the donor route is a fresh round. So they like to sync me up with the donor. So I started my mock cycle on the 12th of January, started my medication soon after. And then on the 24th of January, I had a scan, which was really good. So my lining was nice and thick, was over like 8 millimetres, which is really good. So then my clinic were really, really happy. And then at the first day of February, I had an injection into my muscle, which basically down regulates my cycles. It stops natural cycles. And then obviously I've had a progesterone test as well, just to make sure that my progesterone levels were high enough, which they were, which was fantastic. So the cyclogest is working. So my mock cycle went really, really well. And then I've actually now started the beginning of this week my real cycle, which is really scary, but really, really exciting. So I've started my real cycle on Monday, and I'm back on my medication again. And I have got my first scan is next Thursday. And then at that point, we should hear, after I've had my scan next Thursday, we should hear about how the donor is getting on with her stimulation. And we should then find out, when egg collection is going to be. So yes, it's very, very exciting, but also very, very scary. So I can let you know, I can give you another update next week when I've had my scan and I've heard more from the clinic about how the donor's stimulation is going and when egg collection might be. Okay, thank you. Bye.
So thank you so much to Gemma for that little update. We're keeping in touch with her, so we'll bring you another update in hopefully another few weeks. So today's guest then, I'm delighted to be joined by a lovely lady called Kaylee. And Kaylee is the founder of Fertility Mapper. And this really interesting and informative platform is designed to help you when you're choosing a fertility clinic. You can get reviews, you can understand what your clinic offers, so much information that will really help you narrow down your choices. So I think you're going to find this episode really useful, and then hopefully you can head over to Fertility Mapper once you finish listening to find out more about what's involved. Just a couple of apologies. Might be a little bit of noise disturbance. When I interviewed Kaylee, it was actually just before Christmas. And she was in her office and there were lots of people putting up Christmas decorations. So it was a little bit noisy. So sorry about that. Also, I think Catkin, my cat, also is another uninvited guest. And you can hear her jingling bell. So apologies for any noise disturbance. But hopefully this episode is going to be great. We have cleaned it up as much as we can with any noise interference. So hopefully it's not going to affect your enjoyment. So without further ado, let's bring Kaylee in. Hi, Kaylee. Welcome to the Fertility Podcast.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure. I'm kind of really intrigued about this conversation because I think anything that can help people along their fertility journey, particularly when it comes to understanding treatments and their clinic, is just so needed. So I'm really, really happy to be discussing this with you. So as I mentioned before you joined me, you are the founder of Fertility Mapper, and can you explain, first of all, what is Fertility Mapper and why you set up Fertility Mapper?
Yeah, very happy to. So Fertility Mapper aims to personalise and humanise access to high quality fertility care. And it's really a suite of products starting today with a review site of fertility clinics. And on the review site, we host our generously given community reviews on different clinics so people can kind of compare experiences between clinics. And we also drive transparency around cost by breaking down the costs of different types of treatment by clinic. And then in addition, we have another tool that we've recently launched, which sits between the NHS and the private sector. And this really is a calculator that enables you to answer the question, am I eligible for NHS funded treatment? And we'll get a little bit into the postcode lottery, I'm sure, through the course of the podcast, but ultimately it enables people to understand if they specifically will be able to access NHS treatment within just a few minutes of filling out the calculator. So that's the kind of two key things that we've been working on at the moment.
And that's really useful, isn't it? Because I know a few months ago the government published eligibility criteria for IVF because it was obviously could be quite difficult. People would struggle where to find that information. But I know it's there, it's on the government website, but it's quite limited. So presumably this gives quite a lot more information.
Yeah, it's okay, two things really. So one is a lot more information. And then the other part is we've built an algorithm that tells you if you're eligible, whereas what you find on the government website at the moment, which is brilliant, I'm glad they're sort of driving the transparency, but it's very much the sort of regional information. And so what that means is you have to A, know what ICBs are, you B, then need to know which one is yours, and then C, you have to read through 500 pages of policy documents to understand what that means for you personally. And I think, you asked me slightly earlier kind of how I got to setting this up. I worked in funding and access within the NHS and the Department of Health for many years. So I have previously, in a previous life, written these policy documents. And so kind of combined that knowledge of what these things actually mean together with millions of data sets around postcodes, for example, and our wonderful tech team to kind of simplify everything. So yeah, absolutely. The Department of Health holds a great record of those policies. And what we wanted to do was just take that to the next level and make it really specific for individuals.
Absolutely. You're right. You know, it gives you some information, but actually you want to know what's pertinent for you as an individual. And so I can see that the algorithm would be really useful in doing that. So part of the work that you've done, and this was why I was really interested in talking to you, is you did a really extensive report looking into various different aspects, and we're going to go through them from eligibility criteria to the hidden costs of IVF to different costs at different clinics and lots of information. So let's start with what your report found with differences with regards to the ICBs in eligibility criteria. Let's start with age, because that's always a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's such a kind of good question. So basically, as you said, what the report did was it looked at two different ways that people pay for care, which is the NHS pays on behalf of you, and then through out-of-pocket pay, or what we call the private market. And it brought those both together because as individuals, a lot of people try to get access to the NHS first and then can't get access to the NHS and then they move into the private sector. So it was really important for us to do this extensive research so that we could sit kind of almost follow the journey of someone who is going through treatment themselves. And then as it kind of relates to the NHS side, obviously when these what are called integrated care boards or ICB policy documents, we have lots of different types of things that stratify whether or not you're eligible to access NHS funded treatment or not. So often we talk about the postcode lottery. So yes, it's attached to your postcode, but I would say, or what we say is it's a personal lottery. It's related to things about you. And so those include things like age, which we've just discussed, we can get into. It includes things like BMI. It includes more social factors, what we call social factors, like what is your family structure? How long have you been with your partner? Do you live with them? Do you have previous children? Does your partner have previous children? So it really does kind of ask some pretty deep questions, both on the medical side, but also on the social side, in order to be able to say whether or not you're eligible for NHS funded care. So our report dug into all of those things. And then in terms of with the age, I think the thing that was kind of most interesting was, so typically there wasn't always a minimum age. In some cases there was a minimum age. There was always a maximum age. And then there was sometimes a kind of two-step process. So if you are under 40, you are able to access certain things. If you are over 40, then the eligibility criteria looks slightly different. So kind of your age at the point that you access treatment really matters. And that kind of threshold was ranging, you know, around the 40s up to 42. But then also we had this kind of difference between what was the minimum, like the maximum threshold, and then everything above that.
So what, off the top of your head, and if you can remember, is what was the maximum age?
In many places, the maximum age was 42, so that was a kind of common cutoff point. Right. Though in some ICBs, it's around 40.
So, and then one thing that really frustrates me actually is the differences in the ICBs and local policy when it comes to how long a couple or an individual has to be trying to conceive naturally before they can be referred. And we know that the NICE guidelines are if you're under the age of 35, it should be 12 months. If you're over the age of 35, it's 6 months. But I frequently see ladies coming to me saying, Kate, my doctor's told me I've got to try to conceive naturally for 3 years before I will be referred, which just breaks my heart because that could often be the difference between being able to successfully conceive with treatment and not. So what did you find from the report with regards to that?
Yeah, so absolutely. There's a really big range. And so the kind of most common number is around 2 years of trying in order to access treatment. And that's obviously as a heterosexual couple. And then it gets even more complex if we are talking about same-sex couples. Mm-hmm. And then, but with many, many ICBs going up to 3 years of trying to conceive. So there's a real range. And then I think there's a really important point which isn't covered in the report, but we do pick up on in the outputs of the calculator, which is then we interviewed many GPs over the summer. And without wanting to get them into trouble, there was then also a sort of difference between GPs and what the guidelines say in the local level and then actually what they're doing. And so one of the things I will say is don't be put off. So if you find your ICB says it should be 2 years, you should still go and speak to your primary care physician because actually many primary care physicians do in fact put people through for treatment well ahead of the recommended time.
Yeah, and like you say, I also find it, you know, the other way around as well is that sadly in some circumstances the lack of clinician knowledge, so they will say one thing and actually that's very different to the policy from the ICB as well. So that again is frustrating. So I always say to people, make sure you go and find your policy, go and Google your policy. You'll find, they're all published, they'll be there. It's just hard to find them sometimes, but they'll all be there.
Exactly, and that's actually one of the core things for us building the calculator was that it gives you the answer. So we give you the answer to whether or not you're eligible or not, what you're eligible for, and then we attach the ICB policy, your specific ICB policy, as a PDF to the output. And already we've been going, it was launched about 3 weeks ago, but we've already had people message us saying, we printed it out and I took it to the meeting with my GP so that I could have a really informed conversation with them. And that for us was kind of one of the key things of trying to make, A, it's like accessing the information, making that information super usable. And that is kind of a really important point that you've made, is that not all the GPs know or understand the guidelines, because they are ever changing and quite complex. And in the context of a GP are kind of one area that they've got to know in addition to everything else. So kind of making it, empowering patients or empowering people to have informed conversations is really important.
Absolutely. And that's good to know that you have done that. And that's so, that information is, I can see, being really valuable, because we often talk on the podcast a lot about becoming your own little fertility advocate and being empowered to find out as much information as you possibly can and not feel scared to take that information to your doctor. Because it's difficult, isn't it? When you're sat in front of a doctor, you, and we're all guilty of it, we think, you know, doctor knows best and therefore you'll listen to what they say. But actually, if you've got that hard facts, that written information, then that's going to be very difficult for a GP to argue with, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think this is actually touches on a slightly bigger point. And again, it kind of bridges us between this like NHS and private piece that we've covered in our report, which is that in many other aspects of healthcare, we engage in that kind of interaction as a patient, which means often we give away a lot of our control to a third party, in this case, a GP or a specialist or whoever it might be, who we want to kind of look after us in our time of need or when we're unwell. And I think when it comes to fertility, because it sits at this intersection of, on the one hand, it's a clinical intervention, so it is often considered to be healthcare. On the other hand, it's quite an intense commercial transaction. And that's not really language you like to use in the context of healthcare, and certainly not culturally the sort of language we would use in the UK. But ultimately, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And so there's a kind of real journey that people go on when they start fertility treatment, which is from becoming patients or thinking of themselves as patients solely to becoming informed people or informed consumers as well as patients. And I think that starts right at the beginning when you start to interact with the primary care physician.
It does. And you know, that's not an easy journey to go on, is it? Because we're so used to being a patient and listening to everything that the doctor says, rather than actually being a consumer. And I often say to my patients, you know, if you were going to buy a car, you would be saying, I want leather seats, I want this color. And then if the car turned up and it only had three wheels, you'd be questioning that. Whereas we feel that we can't say that when it comes to fertility care. So it's just changing the mindset from, as you say, patient to consumer. And that's really important. I'm really pleased that we kind of discussion came around to that, because I think that is a vital part and somewhere I think a lot of people will fall down on. One thing that is quite interesting is, and this has been highlighted quite a lot at the moment, is BMI, and particularly when it comes to stigma associated with BMI and fertility treatments. Now, I know and I support the reasons why BMI is there. It is there to protect the woman going through fertility treatment and to protect the kind of neonatal outcomes. However, it is really difficult and it's really frustrating for many people. And I've just read the updated PCOS guidelines, actually, which talk about trying to remove that stigma and actually focusing more on a healthy lifestyle than the BMI. But sadly, BMI is the only calculator we have to determine whether or not somebody is of an ideal weight and healthy for treatment. And that's wrong, but that's where we are. What differences did you see with regards to BMI, or was it the same across the board?
Yeah, so I mean, as it comes to BMI, which is obviously one of the key criteria that the NHS looks at, it's fairly consistent across ICBs, so between kind of 19 and 30. It doesn't range too much. It's kind of one of the areas where they're fairly consistent. But I think it's right exactly what you say, is that obviously we don't have a different way of measuring. So that's the kind of measure that you're using, that it has a big impact on a lot of people who are trying to access treatment. And I think the other thing is that also it's not always clear at the time at which the criteria are applied. And actually, this is fairly consistent across different eligibility criteria. So in some places, the GPs apply the criteria before passing you on to secondary care for tests. And in other places, the GPs don't apply the criteria, pass you on to secondary care, and then when you get into secondary care, they apply the criteria. And so for some things, such as do you have children from a previous relationship, that might change over the course of that period of time, but that tends to be like at the beginning of the waiting list and at the end of the waiting list, fairly fixed. But when it comes to something like BMI, obviously this changes, this can change because people are trying to lose weight in order to get access to treatment. And so, you know, there have kind of been stories of people we've spoken to where they've lost weight, they've kind of gone through the GP process, they've thought they were out of the woods, gained some weight, and then I've kind of got through finally to their secondary care appointment, only to find that they've then over the BMI criteria. So it's this one had less range in terms of across ICBs, but in terms of the point at which it was applied in decision making, seemed to vary slightly based on kind of people.
Yeah. Did you know that very few people who listen to podcasts actually go in and rate, review, and subscribe to a podcast? And what's more, did you know just how much podcasters rely on this to keep going? Probably not. The Fertility Podcast is in its 10th year this year, and it was started, as you know, by now exec producer Natalie Silverman after she became successfully pregnant following IVF. And Nat wanted to give back. And she, then later on joined by me a few years later, have continued to provide a resource of support and information to thousands and thousands of women and men. We do it because we love it. We really do. We do it because we never, ever want someone to feel alone. We do it because we know that it helps people. But I'm going to be really honest with you now. It's getting harder and harder for us to keep going. We can't cover our costs, we never have been able to, and we can't cover our time. But there is something that you can do to help. Just by rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the podcast, you'll increase our ratings, and this means we might just be able to carry on. Please help. This is a really desperate plea because I love doing this podcast and I don't want to stop. The 2 minutes that it would take you to rate, review, and subscribe would make all the difference to us. So if you've ever listened to the podcast, if you've ever been a guest, or if you recognize the Fertility Podcast as a great resource for your patients or your clients, and importantly, if you really want the Fertility Podcast to be here for the next 10 years, I might be a bit old by then, but you know what I mean, then please, please rate, review, and subscribe. All I can say is thank you. This would mean so much. And thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
And we know that obviously with NHS treatment, it's normally a BMI of 30. With private treatments, they tend to be a little bit more lenient, but not a huge amount more, but there is some leniency there,
yeah,
which is good to know.
Sorry, on that point, actually, that is also sometimes can be a trigger for people going abroad. And so at the point that they don't hit the BMI for private treatment in the UK, then that can be a reason why people seek support internationally.
Okay, that's good to know. And then now that we're kind of talking more about private clinics, one thing that when I looked on Fertility Mapper and looked at the different types of clinics, and you've got so much information on the different clinics, you've got the rating, you've got the information on everything that they offer, but what was really interesting was price, cost. And I'm sure this is something you're updating, you know, on a regular basis as well, because it must, I can't imagine the amount of work that has gone into, yeah, this and continues to go into this, because you have to keep it updated all the time. But the difference in costs, we all know that clinics, private clinics, charge different fees, and there are lots of hidden costs, which we'll go into in a moment. And I always suggest to my patients that they shop around, just like, again, buying a car, that you shop around, that you don't just choose the first one that you see, that you do look around for different clinics, whether it be for what support they might offer, what treatments they offer, but obviously cost and live birth rate are the things that you are going to be particularly interested in. So I was completely struck, and we won't mention any names, but I was completely struck by one of your clinics having one cycle of IVF, which was significantly higher than the other clinics. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I think that was definitely the highest and is actually quite an outlier. And if you look at the data, it skews the data significantly. But one thing that's quite interesting is the range and headline price, and there's a really important discussion to have on this, which is what is included in the cost of IVF. So the range in that, and then the range of what was in and out of different packages. And so in the case where the prices are much higher, sometimes, but not always, that means that they include more things in their package price. So they might, for example, take what we kind of call medication risk. So in most packages, medication is not included. Medication is extremely expensive. We don't have the full data set yet. There was something we're kind of working on around the cost of medication, but it ranges between sort of £1,000 to £2,500, depending on how much medication you need, what kind of medication you're taking. So some of those package prices that are much higher include medication, and so that kind of obviously inflates the cost. But even in that case, this particular clinic is obviously charging an awful lot more for their particular services. So there's genuinely a real sort of range. And then the other thing that we kind of looked at, and I know you sort of looked at those ranges of prices on the website, is that's a headline package price. And so when you think about going, let's say you've been on a journey, you tried to get access on the NHS and that didn't work for you, so you looked at the private sector. The first thing you're going to do is have what some clinics call a fertility MOT. They might call it kind of initial consultations and tests, but basically this is like a bucket of activity which includes blood tests, ultrasound scans, and initial consultations, and maybe a follow-up consultation depending on your clinic. And so there's kind of a price associated with that, and that's around £650 on average for a couple, a heterosexual couple. And then from there you add that to the price of the IVF package, and the IVF package, what's in and what's out, is different by clinic. But there's kind of a baseline assumption that you should make of what should be in there, which includes essentially doctor time, theatre time, i.e. when you're going through your process to extract your eggs. It should include blood tests and ultrasound scans, and then it should include sort of vitrification. And so there's a series of things that are like, call it the standard basics needed to conduct treatment. And as I said, some clinics include all of that and then some don't. And if you think that, for example, blood tests are not included in some of the packages, that means every time the doctor runs a blood test, you're paying for that blood test. So if you go to a clinic where the blood test is not included in the package price and that clinic decides to run blood tests 20 times, then, you know, a blood test, which a group of bloods, which might cost, say, £150, you're then paying £150 times 20. So whilst on the kind of headline price, it might look like a package is cheaper, actually, when you add everything in, it gets really, really expensive.
Yeah. And a few years ago, there was, I think it was, I'm sure it was pre-COVID, I'm sure it was something like 2018, 2019, the CMA did a review of fertility clinics, and the outcome of that review was very much that clinics needed to be more transparent with their pricing and have it on their website, make sure that there aren't any hidden costs. Do you think anything has changed since then?
Yeah, it's just such a good question. I think, so I've been watching this for a really long time. I studied health economics. I've worked on funding and access in healthcare for, I don't know, close to 17 years. And so I'm the kind of person who looks at this stuff quite a lot. And so I kind of watched the CMA, I watched before the CMA was looking at pricing, and I have seen a shift. And I think before the CMA did their report, it was actually extremely difficult to get any pricing information on some clinic websites. And I think there was kind of two ways that was happening. So one, you just couldn't get it. So you had to physically go to the clinic in order to get pricing. And then the other way is you can get it, but it's behind a sign up. So sign up and give us your email, and then we will give you the pricing data. And so that was a sort of industry standard that we were seeing before the CMA report. And so in kind of fairness, I know we talk a lot about transparency around cost. I think there's a really long way to go. There has been a shift since that report came out. So now we're kind of in a situation where different clinics are advertising different things in their packages. And so whilst you look at the headline price, when you're looking at two clinics, you're not actually comparing apples and apples. You're in fact comparing an apple and a pear. And so that makes it really difficult as first time or ongoing buyers.
Yeah, I agree. It's so difficult, isn't it? The amount of patients that I have that will start off going, A, they don't know where to start when it comes to trying to decide a clinic, and then navigating through all of that information. And I'm so pleased that you have seen a change since the CMA review, because you're right. I mean, there's nothing worse than not being able to get information until you either physically visit that clinic, because then you're slightly sucked in, or that you give an email, because then you're going to get marketing, which again is sucking you in, and it just seems such an unfair process. So it's great that it's changed. I'm yet to see it, from my point of view, be completely transparent, and I guess that's why Fertility Mapper isn't existent, because you are making things transparent and easy for people to navigate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think from our perspective, writing the report is about beginning that process of starting to make things more transparent, but also helping to educate people in their buying decisions. And kind of what we say is that, you know, maybe some people want to go to the clinic that's charging £20,000, and that's the preferred place. But for other people, that might not be the choice they want to make. And I think it's really important that when they start their journey, they have that transparent information so they can make informed choices. And so the report is kind of the first step for us, but we also have lots of guides on how, you know, this breakdown I talked about of like what's in, what's out, what's you should be adding up. So as you kind of look to start your fertility journey, you can use that information to break things down and understand what costs what at the clinic. It's the reason we've put the individual unit prices on the clinic websites, on our clinic pages on our website. And it's also, you know, also the reason that we've developed these guides. And I think there's another really important thing for us as well, which is at the same time of driving cost, we're also starting to drive transparency on experience. And for me, the two things come hand in hand, because as you start to drive transparency on cost, actually it might be, as I said, you want to go to a more expensive clinic because they have a different offer, an offer that has more bells and whistles, let's say, and you're willing to pay for that. But if you don't know what the difference is between the experiences at the different clinics, it then makes it really hard. So I think driving transparency on experience and on cost at the same time is a super powerful tool, and it's part of the reason we've been driving over the last couple of months these community reviews of fertility clinics to help drive transparency on experience as well as cost.
Fabulous, that is so useful. What we'll do is I'll make sure that we put the details of your website, Fertility Mapper, on in the show notes, so everyone can click on the link and go take a look. Where else can people find you?
Yeah, so they can find us on our website. They can also find us on Instagram, and you know, there's a big and thriving healthy community on Instagram, so we're also part of that as well. And then also our NHS calculator, which is totally free for everyone. We're in the process, actually we haven't announced this yet, but we're in the process of creating a widget. So it will be on other people's websites as well, so not just hosted on our domain, but other places to be announced, that people will be able to go and find it. So hopefully, you know, we can spread the word and support people to get the best information.
Oh, fantastic. Well, please let me know about that, because I'd love to have it on my website too. So we'll have to have a discussion. Yeah. Okay, so before I let you go, what one piece of advice would you give to somebody that is just starting out to perhaps navigate this whole treatment side? What would you recommend?
So I would recommend, I'm only allowed to have one piece of advice. I would say take your time. I've got a few on a list, but I would say take your time to gather the information you need. I think one of the things that that happens quite a lot when we speak to people is, totally understandably, I felt it myself, but the pressure to move and make things happen as quickly as possible is immense. But actually just taking that time to really do your research before you start your fertility journey, to make sure that you find a partner that's the right partner for you, that's going to support you throughout the process, is really important. Because for many of us, that's can be quite a long journey. And so taking your time and really giving yourself the space to do the prep work.
Go on then, what were your others?
My other ones was to look for other people's stories. Long and short, yes. We obviously have reviews. I know you do lots of work, like giving people kind of space to share their stories. Yeah. I think you can take, clearly I'm a bit of a healthcare geek, so I can tell you all about funding and costs, but there's nothing more important than understanding, connecting, listening to the stories of others. And that would be the other piece, is seek out the true stories of people who've been through treatment.
I agree. I totally agree. And that's the whole ethos behind this podcast, is that it's to create commonality to for women and men, whether they're going through a journey as a couple or individuals, to find support and commonality through so many different areas. And Fertility Podcast is one. And it's great to hear that Fertility Mapper is another one. So lots of resources for everyone to tap into. That's what we're all about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Kaylee. I really, really appreciate your time. It's been so interesting hearing all about Fertility Mapper. And as I said, I will put all the links in the show notes so people will know exactly where to find you. So I'm sure you'll be getting lots of questions and interaction coming from us, which will be great. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you so much for your time. And yeah, any questions, send them over. I'd be delighted to answer them. And again, appreciate you having me on this wonderful podcast.
You're very welcome. So I hope you found that useful, hearing all about Fertility Mapper and what it provides. I think it's great that there is somewhere where you can go to understand more about clinics, because it's really difficult to navigate through all of that when you're looking at clinics on their website or trying to determine, you know, the costs, cost comparisons, and the eligibility criteria, because that is so important. That's just, you know, why are there all these barriers to us getting fertility care? It's crazy. But Fertility Mapper definitely makes it easier. So thank you so much to Kaylee for coming on and talking about it. Once again, apologies for sound quality. As I mentioned at the beginning, Kaylee did have some internet issues. I lost her completely at one point. Also there was a bit of background noise where in her shared office space where she was, even though she was in a private room, it was still a little bit noisy. And it didn't help the fact that I'm working from home today and the cat was making a noise with her noisy bell on her collar. So all round, a bit of noise disturbance, but hey, that's life. Anyway, we'll be back in another 2 weeks with another fabulous episode. So keep tuned. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fertility Podcast, which is brought to you by Nat Chat Productions. The music is composed by Parla. It's hosted by Kate Davis, and the episodes are put together by Ella Woodhouse and exec produced by me, Natalie Silverman. Before you click onto your next podcast, we'd love it if you could either click on the star ratings or write a quick review, as it's a brilliant way for others to know what you think. And even just hitting follow or subscribe really helps other people know it's worth a listen. Finally, just to say, you can follow the podcast on Insta at @fertilitypoddy. Kate is @yourfertilitynurse. And if you'd like to book in a consultation with Kate to understand more about your fertility and reproductive health, just visit yourfertilityjourney.com.